recently.
Yeah, it was fairly recent. At least in the movie, it showed, 2010.
You know, this is making me think of perhaps the case that it's based on. I don't remember it being in Bolivia, but I do remember that being a case of kind of almost like a culture of sexual assault in, it may have been Mennonite or Anabaptist colonies of some kind. I mean, and it's kind of quite easy to see how that would happen, maybe, because they are sort of completely closed off from the world, which I think is sort of part of the religious doctrine in that sense. And also pretty male dominated, I'm guessing.
I think that was the reoccurring theme in the movie, that men or the boys even have so much more opportunities than women, and women throughout their day, what they do is basically spend their time, doing chores at home, and because they want to make a decision about themselves, they host secret meetings. And what was interesting is that when they were leaving the town, they decided to take the boys with them, their boys, because they said that these boys can be, they would not necessarily become like their fathers or their uncles or their, ancestors, elders, I mean. But we need to socialize them properly. And I think that is a very important aspect of it, like thinking that all men are gonna turn out like that. It's not right, and it's also like making a blatant assumption about, how people grow up and what are people's values. And I think with the right socialization, they can evolve over the years.
I mean, I think you mentioned one of the main reason that they moved from Canada to Bolivia was to avoid having their children entered into public schools. And I think that sort of shows the, I guess, the opposite end of it, that, it requires kind of isolation and, a real kind of intensive maintenance of people to kind of maintain these kind of hardcore patriarchal cultures.
Yeah, and I think they were too scared to send the women to school, honestly. And what was sad was the fact that the men, the husbands, the brothers, they all went to the town to get bails for the abusers or those, of the offenders. And it was really sad. And it questions this idea of self-worth and also sense of safety for these women. Like, you have a family with them, you have your kids, and how do you fit into that? And do you feel safe? And then does your, girls feel safe? And there were heartbreaking moments, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it is definitely very hard for women to leave these kind of situations. I mean, in abusive relationships, women with children, it's extremely hard. It's hard financially, it's hard emotionally, it's hard when you have ties. And, I can't imagine for these women, because they're in Bolivia and this is not a country they have any ties to outside of this religious community, which presumably is not really even that connected to the outside world at all. And I guess it was left kind of unanswered whether they would go back to Canada or.
It was left unanswered. So the movie basically focused on, those secret meetings among a group of women who wanted to discuss the future of themselves in the colony on the behalf of other women in the colony. So it ended up looking like, do you want to stay and fight or do you want to leave? So ultimately, okay, spoiler alert, they left. But the whole movie was how do they come to the conclusions of, that we want to leave, because there were a lot of healing and traumatic moments that, geared the movie down to that conclusion that, yeah, we want to leave and we want to take our boys as well with us. What was interesting was, or what was missing was, what these women are going to do, and specifically in terms of what's their economic standing, like, did they take enough? I mean, of course, they were packing up foods and grains and, you know, took their horses with them. But, yeah, it kind of, it, yeah, the movie ended pretty open-ended, and then it's up to you to do your research and find out. I don't know. Yeah. And,
I mean, yeah, it's called Women Talking, so it is kind of a film about, I guess, kind of collective decision-making, yeah, in a sense. Though, yeah, though you did also say that they voted.
Yeah, they voted. It was a movie about collective decision-making. But then there was... It was done in a way that everybody had a voice, mm-hmm, and a choice. And so there were definitely differences of opinions, mm-hmm, and different characters. And, you know, Claire Foy's character was like, no, I am going to stay and fight these men. And I'm going to, you know, rip their hearts open. And, you know, very, like, very strong woman who's ready, mm-hmm, to do anything so that her daughter stays protected, like a four-year child. And whereas... Rooney Mara's character was more like, you know, only love can heal things. And it reminded me a lot of Bell Hooks, maybe? I don't know. Yeah, only love can heal things. And we should take boys with us because if we give them the right kind of love, the right kind of support, they will be good human beings. So, yeah, very different characters, very interesting storyline. Only... regret I have. I wish I could see a little more of Frances McDormand. It was just, her part was very less.
I haven't seen the film, though this conversation is making me want to watch it, but I am very fond of Frances McDormand's in kind of whatever she's in. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's interesting to me that I guess it's kind of a secret meeting that sort of takes place in this barn. I mean, it obviously makes sense, right? Because, you know, they're in this, yeah, kind of community, and it does not provide kind of a space for women to make decisions or to even have discussions about making decisions. But I don't know, that it makes me think about kind of, I feel like there's almost kind of a history or a lineage of this idea of like women's networks that, yeah, are kind of hidden from sight by necessity. And also I think there's kind of a male fear of these women's networks, even where they might not exist.
No, I understand what you know, when you say that, because I feel like I have a network of my own like that, you know, like whether it's, you know, my family or my friends or in school, I feel like I do have a network. I have seen my grandmothers having such networks like that. So yeah, but I don't know, you know, the aspects of those networks, like what those networks does exactly. But I know, like, these networks exist. And the reason they were holding secret, they could hold meetings in the first place. It was because the men left the town and they had 48 hours to decide. And, yeah, they were in a barn or a hayloft kind of place. And I do really appreciate Ben Whishaw's character as August. And His character is a man who came back from the town to help these women to write meeting notes. Basically, these women can't read or write.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
In 2010. Yeah. That is, I mean, we were talking about gender equality development goals earlier, and that is really quite astounding, honestly. Because, yeah, I mean, they were raised in Canada, you know. It's, yeah, that's actually, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, these women can't read or write. Even, yeah, none of their children, like, none of their girls can do either. So, yeah, Ben Whishaw was brought, and Ben Whishaw's character, August, was excommunicated from the colony. Oh, wow. Because his mother, back in the days, used to, you know, instigate or incite ideas of independence and agency among women in the colony. So that's why their whole family was excommunicated, and Augusta's father was considered, you know, not a man enough. So yeah, that was a really good movie, but yeah, there was a lot of spoilers too.
That character makes me think of, I've just looked it up, there's a documentary film called Queer Hutterite, which is about the life of a man called Kelly Hofer, which is about a gay Hutterite man who kind of goes away from his colony, in which is sort of structured similar, mm-hmm, to this, I think. Obviously, yeah. in, you know, rural Manitoba, and mm-hmm. he kind of goes to the city and sort of finds himself.
Yeah.
But he also has this kind of ongoing complicated relationship with his community. And if I remember correctly, I think he's a photographer, and he's taken these very insightful and sort of intimate portraits of Hutterite life.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just the male character you mentioned kind of made me think of that, because it is, I can imagine how you would have these sort of feelings of very mixed feelings towards this community, because you grow up in it, right? And it's very closed off from the world and very distinct.
Yeah. And the reason he was brought back to the community was the women wanted him back, and they thought, this is the person we could trust to write our meetings. And of course, there was a romantic angle involving August and Rooney Mara's character, but
they were unable to escape that trope. You've got to write it in somewhere.
It was a very interesting character indeed. And yeah, I don't know. The feeling I had looking at his character was, I wish more men in the world were like him.
Yeah, it's thinking about that character's inclusion, it definitely feels like hope, and maybe also something for male viewers to kind of hold on to, in a sense, kind of a representation on screen of, definitely is a bit of a crisis in terms of positive masculine icons who aren't horrible people.
Especially historically, when you have people like Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger defining manhood, and then there was an era of like charming but smart man, kind of Tom Cruise era, and yeah, I think it all goes back to this idea of hegemonic or masculinity and how men perceive themselves and in relation to whom. And I feel like men who cannot fulfill the ideals, or they think they cannot fulfill the ideals of hegemonic masculinity, they can often, you know, feel secluded or, you know, cornered by the community itself or by society itself, and that is dangerous for their mental health too. So yeah, I really like the fact that these women in the movie decided to take their little boys. And the funniest part was Claire Foy, when she told her son that you are coming with me, and her son was 13, and he didn't want to go with her, with his mother, but you know, Claire Foy's character was like a very strong and dashy, pushy woman. He basically tranquilized him with horse tranquilizer, and was like, "No, he's coming with me. He's my son. I'll shape him into the right person."
He will thank you for it later, probably, that he doesn't grow up into a kind of patriarchal nightmare figure.
Yeah. I think there was a double entendre there. The horse tranquilizers were initially used by men on women in their sleep so that they can come and, you know, sexually exploit them.
This is the case I'm thinking of actually now, because I think I have read about the real case of this before, and I remember the thing about the tranquilizers.
Oh, okay. That's interesting, because that's, yeah, I think that's what it means, like when, you know, when Claire Foy goes and tranquilizes her own son. I do really like her character.
Yeah, so I think we're going to play some music now. We have about 15 minutes left of the show. How about we play two of yours?
Sure. So I have brought Borrowed Time by Tonya, and she is a black woman living in Vancouver, actually, and she immigrated from London, I believe. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, she's a British artist. And the second song I will be playing is A Boosie Junction by Kokoroko, and they're also a British band. They combine jazz music with Afro beats, basically. So they're very cool, and it's also a group of black women. So yeah, I just basically wanted to focus on women of color and their music throughout the show.
Fantastic. Yeah. So we're starting off with Borrowed Time by Tony Aganaba.
When I had you here, Lord knows I didn't see what a gift had been bestowed on me. I took love for granted, 'cause I thought you'd always be around. But nowadays I look around, you're nowhere to be found. See, I'ma beg you, if you let me, I'm on borrowed time, don't forget me. I'll be blue. Bestowed on me, Lord, it was bestowed on me. I took love for granted, empty-handed. Now I look around, but you know where to be found. Lord, when will you come around? I'ma beg you, if you let me, I'm on borrowed time, don't forget me. I'll be blue. Forget me. I'm still picking up the pieces of my heart. I'ma beg you, take back goodbye. Borrow the stars out from your eyes. Oh, for one more night. Would that be alright?
You're listening to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Nat.
And I'm Mahaley.
And we've had kind of a very wide-ranging discussion today. We had a little bit of a rambling talk about UN developmental goals, and then we
spoke about this movie, which I recently watched, Women Talking. Yeah. If you ever get a chance to watch the movie, Nat, you should watch it. It's on Prime.
I definitely will. I mean, this is making me feel like we should have kind of a feminist movie discussion hour, because when you were talking about the film, it sort of almost sounded like, I guess, like a bit of a feminist dialogue in miniature, kind of, because the way you said these women have kind of different perspectives on this situation. And we should probably say, sort of again, the film is Women Talking, and it's about a kind of discussion between women on a rural Christian farming colony in Bolivia after their community has been kind of racked by these sexual assault allegations. It makes me think of, it feels like this feminist dialogue in miniature with these women taking different positions about kind of what they should do. Should they bring their sons or not? Yeah. Should they stay or fight? And I wonder if it's kind of a meta commentary almost, maybe, that could be applied to some other things.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a meta commentary on, you know, the status of women. But I was curious what it would look like if, you know, something similar was documented, or, you know, a director is making a film about colored women. And yeah, I don't know the exact effect or sensitivities required to do that, but it's, yeah, I would be interested in a movie like this about you know, a group of colored women, because initially I was a little hesitant watching this, because I was like, if it's about, you know, white liberal feminism, it's kind of a feminism I don't relate to, then I don't want to watch it. But then on a fundamental level, it, you know, the movie just touched the right notes. So I feel like, yeah, this is a great movie, but we expect movies like this almost every year to come out, so that, you know, it can cover a myriad range of topics.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is definitely the actors you mentioned, Frances McDormand, Claire Foy, and I don't know about the directors, but I can definitely see how, even though it is this very kind of, not exotic, but I guess sort of, it's not really a situation that, you know, it feels kind of in of itself on this, you know, rural colony deeply embedded in like this very kind of biblical culture.
Yeah.
Even though on that level it's maybe not something that's part of popular like liberal feminist discourses, definitely feels like a very timely film in terms of like, you know, sexual assault allegations and sort of women's discussion and handling of those kind of things. But, you know, in of itself, as you said, that is kind of, it is a timeless thing. It is, and sort of a culturalist thing in some sense, in that it is something that women deal with and respond to in kind of all places and situations.
I feel like a main theme was how, you know, how will their relationship change with God? And yeah, I think I'm just going on here and I'm...
Yeah,
I don't want to give any more spoilers, you guys.
Watch the movie is the conclusion of this discussion. So, yeah, this has been a very wide-ranging and interesting discussion on Intravenous or CGSF 90.1 FM. And playing us out will be the song Abusey Junction by Kokoroko.
Kokoroko.
And I think they're a Black British band.
They're a Black British band,
The genre was...
Afro meets jazz.
Right. That sounds fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us.